Progressive Radio Network. Today, we have as our guest Dr. Andrew Campbell, who is a medical doctor, and he trained at the Orlando Regional Medical Center in Florida and at the Medical College of Georgia before moving to Houston, Texas, where he was the medical director of the Center for Immune and Toxic Disorders for over 20 years. He specialized in immunology and toxicology, and he has held various leadership positions in hospitals. He served both as a faculty member and a member of admissions for the University of Texas Medical School, and he founded the St. John Vianney Clinic for the indigent and served as president in a number of medical organizations, both national and international. He is currently the editor-in-chief of two peer-reviewed and indexed medical journals. Dr. Campbell has received awards from many organizations, both medical and consumer, national and international. He is fluent in several languages, including English, French, Spanish, and Hungarian, and he has been featured on 2020, The Montel Williams Show, 24-hour investigative news, NBC, ABC, CBS, throughout the United States, Canada, and Mexico. And we're so proud and happy to have him here today, right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. So thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Campbell.
I am with you.
Perfectly. It's coming in loud and clear, and thank you so much. I did your whole introduction, and I'll also let our listeners know that you are involved with InnoVision Professional Media, and we talked already about the journals, the peer-reviewed journals that you are the editor-in-chief for, and I know that's a lot of work keeping the best information available in those journals. And also, you will be presenting at conferences for integrative medical professionals through InnoVision as well. And people can find out more at InnoVisionHM.com. And that's, there's links then to the various conferences and the journals. So I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for the comments you've made. Yes, it's very exciting to be part of InnoVision and put on and be the chair of these conferences. I'll be speaking at seven different conferences from now through December. And
well,
there's a lot
of information.
You'll
be busy all over the country.
Yes, all over.
Well, it's excellent, and people can join in by going to InnoVisions, finding the conference that's coming up next. I mean, I know there's one very soon to this show, but we don't like to limit our shows to announcing various dates because we certainly may replay this show. But there are, as you said, several coming up this year in various areas of the country. I know there's one in Scottsdale, there's one in Fort Lauderdale, and many other cities around the country. And I'm wondering if the data from these really high-end medical conferences would be available for people who can't attend, such as purchasing either videos or audios of the conference. Do you know if that will be available?
Yes, there's they videotape and put on disc every speaker at these conferences, and by contacting InnoVision, you can purchase for a nominal fee the CD and DVD and watch it on your computer or anywhere else you like.
Oh, that's excellent. So that will be available, and they can find out more by going to InnoVisionHM.com, and that's a really good place to get more information as well. So going back in your history, obviously you were trained in conventional medicine, and yet I would call your focus integrative, where you're bringing in really what really should be called now, I think, prudent and best medical techniques, because you're bringing in what's evidence-based, but unfortunately often ignored in conventional medicine.
That's very true. Conventional medicine looks more at what is being published and what is being discussed at conferences that are put on by various interests rather than having absolutely no commercial bias and being able to use what is best for your patient, because that's the key to taking care of our patients, yours and mine and everyone else's. Healthcare is about using what's best for that particular patient, and it's not one size fits all, as we know. So unfortunately, conventional medicine is very, very entrenched. Part of it is because those people have to follow rules that they feel have been implemented by pharmaceutical companies, by the insurance companies. They have to do it a certain way. They don't have much choice. They can't prescribe what they want. They've got to prescribe what's on the list from the insurance company for that particular patient's carrier, et cetera. It's very limiting. However, for people like you and I, we have the wonderful freedom to help people without having those restrictions and really taking what is best from conventional medicine and taking also what's best from alternative medicine, combining the two, integrating them, and helping our patients get well.
That's so true. And I even actually no longer like the word alternative, because I am really promoting that these things, what works best according to literature and outcome studies, be used as the standard of practice, not alternative.
I
like
agree
alternative
with you.
Would be something else. Maybe the pharmaceuticals would be alternative. If all else fails, then we could go to a strong pharmaceutical, because when we look at the adverse event profile to be patient-centered, we should get the best results with the least possibility of adverse effects, along with a good cost profile.
You are absolutely correct, and I think that eventually the word alternative will fade away, and right now it's being used in the sense of, is there another way of treating this? Is there another form of treatment? You know, when I was a child and I had a cough, I was given a teaspoon of sugar with lemon juice. You know, that helped my cough. Well, if you want, you can call that alternative, but it worked. That's all we had.
Right, it worked. And also, what was the downside? Did it ruin your microbiome, which we'll be talking about today? No. So,
no, and it gave me some vitamin
C. You know, it just makes so much more sense. And really, it is exciting. For instance, this week, I lectured at Holy Cross Hospital in Fort Lauderdale. And I was the invited speaker to a very large gathering and conference for anesthesiologists. So, you know, there are openings. And what we talked about actually was a similar topic to what we'll be talking about today, which was intestinal permeability and its link to into the inflammatory response. And the fact that a lot of the pharmaceuticals actually worsen the problem. And also the latest data on NSAIDs and also acetaminophen-like drugs in terms of their vast array of adverse effects. So here it was in front of a mainstream medical audience, and they were very interested, and it was very new information to them. It was not like talking to the already converted, which I also often find is the case when we go to, you know, places where only people interested in natural medicine might be.
I agree with you. I think that that's a great step in bringing it to doctors who kind of hesitatingly glance at it, but when it's in front of them, will be glad to look at it and, you know, listen and make their own decision if that's really helpful or not. And if it's worth giving it a try, and this helps bring them over to a new way of thinking, a different way of thinking, a more normal and logical way to practice medicine.
Absolutely, and more fulfilling, both for the physician who actually sees people get well, and, of course, the patients, the end users who get well. That's the most exciting thing about the whole process of integrative medicine, is that we see actual cures which is almost a bad word when you're thinking about only modulating and managing illness.
Oh, absolutely. And there are cures even for diseases that we thought we could never cure, such as cancer. There is one doctor that I personally know who uses some chemotherapy, but not the way it's normally given, who has a wonderful success rate among his patients. And he's about to publish those.
Oh, well, hopefully you'll publish it in one of your journals. And I do want to talk about those journals because I think they are playing a major role in allowing more conventionally trained physicians and healthcare providers to actually feel confident about integrating many of these more natural therapies, because the journals are peer-reviewed and they're widely published and they're available, and they talk about, you know, dosing and outcomes and case studies that really gives providers the background to feel confident in using these modalities.
Right, and I make sure as editor that we get the best studies. We have a lot of people submitting studies, but some of them aren't that great, and some of them are absolutely splendid and really forward-thinking, and they've taken a lot of patients, and they've tried something, and they've done it double-blind, the whole gamut of different things that we have available for testing new therapies, and they work, and they show they work.
Well, let's talk about those journals.
The
name of one, Alternative Therapies in Health and Medicine. Is that the correct name?
Right. And it's about,
we want people
33
to be
years
able
old
to find
now, so
it.
It's not a new journal that just popped up.
Right.
I'm sorry?
It's been around quite a while. And, you know, that has excellent studies in it. And then what are some of the, how can people find these? Would that have a website, Alternative Therapies in Health and Medicine, or is there another way to find it easily?
It has a website.
Okay, good. It's,
and usually the most recent issue is on the website for people to be able to look through and review. So they can look at all the articles, click on them, and see what's been written.
It's wonderful.
The other journal
service
is Advances.
Okay.
Advances in Mind-Body Medicine, which takes a look at how the brain connects with the body and how the body connects with the brain. Just like when you and I say, or hear people say, I've got butterflies in my stomach, I've got a gut feeling. How does that happen? How does the brain feel butterflies or have a gut feeling? Well, all those are connected, and we show the connections between the brain and the rest of the body and vice versa. And these journals, again, both of these are, you can look at them on the internet, Advances in Mind-Body Medicine. This is the second one, and you could read the latest issue, read every article in the latest issue.
That's a wonderful service, because I really think it's helping not only public can look at it. You don't have to be a healthcare provider to look at it. Great information there, but especially for providers so that they can feel supported by really well-based literature in moving forward and some of the more integrative techniques.
Yes. In this latest issue, we did the article about a 10-year retrospective study on, is manual physical therapy helpful to treat female infertility? Well, I think that's very important, because people who want to have children spend tens of thousands of dollars in infertility treatment. Well, here's a very simple way to do it, yet it's been looked back over 10 years of data. So that's not a small amount of data.
That's interesting. I never read that study. What kind of physical therapy were they talking about? Would any physical therapist know how to apply that, or is it just me?
No. They had 1,400 female patients between 2002 and 2011, and with diagnosis of infertility, including occluded fallopian tubes, hormonal problems, endometriosis, And some of them were actually undergoing in vitro fertilization at the time. And they underwent whole body patient-centered treatment that used a protocol of manual physical therapy, which focused on restoring mobility and motility to structures affecting reproduction. And
wow.
What did they do? They had a 60.85, almost 61%, a rate of clearing occluded fallopian tubes. The patients with endometriosis those women have a very difficult time getting pregnant. They had a 43% pregnancy rate. And, I mean, just on and on. And this is one of the wonderful things that we look at to help people. Is there an other way of doing this? So it is. This was done in Gainesville, Florida. So not too far from Holy Cross Hospital in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah. Oh, that's sick. Yes. Wow. Where I just was, like I said, the other day presenting. That's great. You know, I didn't read that. That's why we have to keep on top of everything, because I get these journals myself, and I didn't happen to read that article. And now the next time a woman comes across my path with this issue, and I have a actually fairly large fertility practice, then I will know to actually make printouts of the article and just give them this advice that they can look into, because it's certainly less toxic than many of the fertility drug interventions that are used.
Yes. And that kind of effectivity over a 10-year period is astounding.
That is wonderful. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. Now, I know at the up-and-coming conference, you're going to be talking about a topic that we will discuss here as well, which is the importance of a healthy microbiome and its link to inflammation. And that is an important topic because inflammation is involved in every illness, and especially all kinds of degenerative illnesses.
That is correct. Everything that you, all chronic disorders are somehow linked in some way, shape, or form to inflammation. And this inflammation is overwhelming nowadays due to the problems that we're having from diet, from environmental factors. This includes, by the way, cancers and autoimmune diseases like lupus and rheumatoid arthritis and infertility. So I think that it starts with the microbiome, and that's because when you and I were inside our mothers, it wasn't part of us. It wasn't a part of that developed embryonically, or it didn't develop inside the womb. It's not made up of any human cells, and it's not smaller or microscopic. It weighs about 3 pounds, as much as the brain. And our bodies are made up of 37 trillion cells. The microbiome has 100 trillion cells more, so 135 or 37 trillion cells in the microbiome. And
now,
we are made up as humans.
Let people know this. We're talking about something I find people think is yucky, like you are saying in simple terms. This microbiome are actual microorganisms that kind of call our body home, just like whoever we think we are, our spiritual essence, is in this vehicle that's walking around. They are physically there, too.
Right. And inside the womb, it's sterile. We get nutrients, oxygen from mom, and also medications if she takes an over-the-counter drug or anything, or is exposed to environmental chemicals. The fetus gets those too, and the fetus gives back to mom fetal waste and carbon dioxide. And what happens is, at just before birth, as we all know, mother's water breaks you know, it's just flooding. But it's a flooding of lactobacilli. These are bacteria that were colonizing the vaginal birth canal for a couple of months before birth because it provides an acidic environment which prevents the growth of candida and other pathogens. And now this acidic environment covers the entire canal as well as the upper thighs and prepares this area for the baby to be born through. And the first fluids entering the baby's mouth are mother's microbes. And so that's really the beginning. Mother's milk contains lactobacilli. It helps break down lactose, the major sugar in milk. And mom's first milk for the first 2 or 3 days is colostrum, which also contains protective antibodies from mother for the newborn baby. A few days later, this breast milk changes to more carbohydrates. And one of those carbohydrates is oligosaccharides, which baby cannot digest. It's made to provide nutrition for the for this newly forming microbiome in the baby's gut. And so it takes about 3 years for that microbiome to develop. And this is the time when at age 3, it's basically the same microbiome until old age. And so it's very important that we help this microbiome continue. Unfortunately, in the United States, there's something that happens. And that is that there are antibiotics. And antibiotics kill good bacteria and bad bacteria. And women in labor usually get antibiotics, mostly to prevent infection by group B streptococcus. And this amounts to about 40% of all women in the United States receiving an antibiotic during delivery, which means the baby's getting exposed to an antibiotic at the same time they're getting their first microbes to build their microbiome. Now, group B streptococcus resides in the gut, mouth, and skin, and occasionally in the vaginal area of women, but it rarely causes any medical problems. And 25 to 30% of women carry this bacteria, and that can damage the newborn. But that's an easy test. But nobody uses it. So every year, more than 1 million pregnant women are getting this antibiotic, and that means one baby in 200 gets sick from the streptococcus, but the other 199 will get the antibiotic. And then when they're born, all babies are given an antibiotic in their eyes. This is to prevent gonococcal ophthalmia. So this is in women who in the past, decades ago and in the last century, had gonorrhea. And this is a prophylaxis for this, but it contains tetracycline. So these eye drops are given to the 4 million babies born every year in the United States. In other countries, for example, Sweden, babies don't get any antibiotics. Either a mother doesn't get them during birth, and babies don't get them in the eye. And there's no infection rate whatsoever. It's zero. So
what a big difference.
A lot of antibiotics. I'm sorry?
Well, I just wanted to tell you that we do have to take a short break right here. And when we come back, we will continue that fascinating discussion. And one thing I want to bring up, Dr. Andrews, since you've been talking about this incredible microbiome transference between mother and child, is what happens if the mother has a C-section? So we will pick up with that when we come back. And I want to thank you so much for listening to us right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You're listening on Progressive Radio Network, and we will be right back with more.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the ancient Chinese science and art of acupuncture.
Acupuncture is a 5,000-year-old medical procedure involving insertion and manipulation of needles into specific points on the body. It is often applied to relieve pain during surgery and for many other conditions.
Acupuncture needles have been found in China that are over 4,000 years old. The first needles were made of stone. Later, bronze, gold, or silver was used, and today they are usually made from steel. Acupuncture was developed around the theory of special meridian points on the body connected to the internal organs, and that vital energy, or qi, flows along these meridians. According to this theory, diseases are caused by interrupted energy flow, and the stimulation of these points restores normal energy circulation. There is some scientific evidence of the existence of the meridians as a separate circulatory system. Studies were done in the 1970s by a Dr. Kim from Korea, where he injected radioactive dyes into the traditional acupuncture points. He observed migration of the dyes along the exact predicted path of the meridians.
Okay. How acupuncture works remains uncertain, but both Western and Eastern scientific studies on rabbits have shown that the analgesic effects are not simply a matter of suggestion. After the discovery in 1975 of endorphins, natural pain inhibitors in the body, some neurophysiologists suggested that the needles may trigger the release of these substances. American and Chinese studies have confirmed that placing acupuncture needles in the brains of dogs raises the level of endorphins in the spinal fluid.
Acupuncture is used today in most hospitals in China and by many private practitioners in virtually every country in the world, including the United States. The primary use is for analgesia, although ulcers, hypertension, asthma, and other conditions have been documented to respond favorably to this treatment. Chinese surgeons prefer acupuncture to the use of drug-induced analgesia because they claim it does not disturb normal body physiology and therefore does not make the patient vulnerable to shock. Brain surgery is especially amenable to this form of analgesia when it is necessary to keep the patient awake during the operation.
Although some modifications in the practice of acupuncture have been made, such as sometimes using a small electric current on the needle instead of the traditional twirling, acupuncture remains intact as an ancient therapeutic technique that has been used successfully for at least 5,000 years. Perhaps you'd like to add this piece of knowledge to your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back once again right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we love to see you. We love to see you in person, and we love to see you online. So you can get in touch by going to naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. We have lots of classes and workshops available, many of which are approved for CE credits for health providers, including nurses, midwives, acupuncturists, massage therapists, and dietitians. Also, we have credentialing for those who are not necessarily healthcare professionals but would like to get a certificate in taking our classes. They are available both online and on ground in several areas of the country, and they are ongoing. So you can go to naturalnurse.com education. We have one tonight, for instance. That one is on careers in natural health. And if any of you are interested in expanding your professional life to actually be able to interface with some of this great information that we bring you right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we have an upcoming class in Chinatown where we actually investigate Chinese medicine from the inside out. And we even go down into the basements in Chinatown looking at FDA-approved herbal facilities. So there's a lot of exciting things that you can learn by visiting us at naturalnurse.com. Today, we are so happy to have as our guest Dr. Andrew Campbell, who has a long, long list of accomplishments, including one that we are focusing on today because he is the editor-in-chief of two peer-reviewed journals, and they are indexed medical journals. That's Alternative Therapies in Health and Medicine and Advances in Mind-Body Medicine. Both of those have websites. You can Google them and find them, where the current issue is there for you to peruse and read. And, of course, then you could always subscribe if you want to get it every month. And the hard copies are absolutely beautiful. Also, Dr. Campbell is involved in lecturing all over the country for InnoVision Professional Media. Those are going on. Find it in your state. There's one coming up in Florida. There's one coming up very soon in Arizona and in other cities. You can go to InnoVisionHM.com. That's InnoVisionHM.com to find out more about all of those conferences. Dr. Andrew will be lecturing there on the importance of a healthy microbiome and its link to inflammation. And we're in the middle of an incredible discussion that really has been centering on the microbiome and its importance in birth, which is not necessarily discussed very often. So thank you so much for bringing that to our attention, and welcome back, Dr. Andrew Campbell.
Thank you. You were asking me about C-sections.
Right, because you were talking about, let's just review a little, the healthy transference of the healthy microbiome through a normal birth.
Yes, and C-sections are safe, and when the mother's or baby's life is in danger, they're done quickly and efficiently, and they save lives. However, now we're reaching the rate of around 20% for all births in the United States being C-sections, whereas communities and cities, countries in Europe, for example, the rate is around 4%. And there's a variety of reasons. One is it helps some mothers to know exactly the date of birth because of working around holidays or whatever. But the fact remains is that it was 1 in 5 in 1996 and 1 in 3 in 2011, according to the CDC. So they're increasing constantly. And when you're born by a C-section, that baby doesn't get the lactobacilli that I previously mentioned from mother's birth canal. The first bacteria they're exposed to are those from the skin of hospital personnel or instruments. And the effects of this have been studied. Babies born from C-sections are 80% more likely to develop asthma than those born via natural childbirth. They're more likely to have diarrhea during their first year of life. And they're twice as likely of developing allergy to cow's milk and food allergies. So there is a give and take that we are more aware of now. However, it still continues to grow, and so that is definitely a problem that people need to be aware of when making their decision about the birth of their child.
You know, I did have a guest on who's an MD pediatrician. I believe she was from NYU, and she actually did a study of re-inoculating those babies born by C-section from actually swabbing fluid from the mother into the baby's mouth when it's born.
Well, that is certainly one way to get around that issue.
Right. You know, that we should probably republish that in one of our journals. It's quite a good study and impressive and very simple, cost-effective. You know, obviously the attending physician has to be aware of it and just do one little manipulation, and who knows what they could charge for doing that, whatever, added to that humongous bill. And nonetheless, she has shown that actually it did reestablish healthy flora in the infants where it has been tried with no adverse effect. So there's, wow, you know, there's ways around it, just really by being open-minded and sometimes using common sense.
Yeah, I agree. Well, that's how a baby can start developing a normal microbiome, and it really is essential to our well-being, because the microbiome, we need the microbiome. We need it to be able to digest fruits and vegetables, to produce vitamins such as vitamin B12, vitamin K, niacin, and others. 80% of our immune system is in our gut, so it's very essential for the immune system. It helps guide the immune system to attack bad bacteria, not the good kind. It helps get rid of toxins, some of which can cause cancer. What your microbiome does is it degrades these chemicals so it could be eliminated in your stools. And very importantly, the microbiome produces neurotransmitters. For example, serotonin and all these neurotransmitters are produced in the gut, then they get into the brain. So serotonin is the precursor of melatonin. So then you sleep well, and serotonin is the happy brain hormone. You know, it's what all these Prozac and Wellbutrin and all these Paxil, et cetera, try to regulate. Well, it can be regulated by having a good, healthy microbiome. And there are more nerve cells in the gut than in the spinal cord. And what we've got to remember is that our gut will process an average of 1 ton of food every year in the adult. So that's a microbiome in the gut is continually and persistently exposed to foods and liquids and chemicals throughout life. And it's very important that it be healthy. Now, one of the problems is that we get exposed to all kinds of chemicals in our foods. As a matter of fact, there was a study of 9,300 average Americans, and they studied what do these people eat and how they eat them, etc., and they finally published this study. Well, in this study, they showed that these people consume not only processed food, but what they called ultra-processed foods. And these are found in people's pantries and freezers, et cetera. They're salty snacks, frozen meals, soft drinks, ready-to-eat and heat pizzas, fruit drinks, breakfast cereals, sauces, dressings, gravies, sweet snacks, milk-based drinks, desserts, French fries, sandwiches, and hamburgers on the bun, ready-to-eat kind that you put in the microwave and heat, instant and canned soups. I mean, that's a lot of processed chemicals.
That's for sure. And of course, you are an expert on that with your background in toxicology, which is so often ignored.
Yes. And these have a tremendously negative effect. The authors of that study of 9,300 Americans, defined ultra-processed foods as industrial formulations which, besides salt, sugar, oils, and fats, include substances not used in culinary preparations, and in particular, additives used to imitate sensorial qualities of minimally processed foods and their culinary preparation. So what they're saying is, all these foods have chemicals in them that make them taste like food, but they're not food. Well, you know, 100 years ago, Dr. Elie Metchnikoff watched these Bulgarians in rural areas who lived in poverty and in a harsh climate, yet they died at a very old age. And he found that they all ate homemade yogurt. And he was the first one to realize what we can do to help the microbiome is it's benefited by probiotics. And he concluded that old age could be delayed by improving the gut microbiome with microbes from sour milk. And he called it probiotic, meaning for life. And he called dysbiosis the imbalance that you get from eating all these processed foods. That was 100 years ago, and he won the Nobel Prize for medicine for that.
How come this information seems to have gotten so lost over the years? This is so interesting.
Well, medicine fell in love with antibiotics. I mean, here were all these diseases that killed people, rich and poor, old and young. Pneumonia from 1900s to the 1930s was the number one killer in the United States. If you developed a bronchitis, my gosh, you were in deep trouble because it could easily develop into pneumonia. And when it did, that was it. You were done for. There was nothing to help you. And all these old scourges that for millennia had affected us, all of a sudden here comes penicillin and gets rid of it. And it was wonderful. And medicine fell in love with this. We give one pill and it takes care of everything. And it went running looking for a pill to take care of everything. Oh, you have a headache? Here's a pill. Oh, your stomach is bothering you? Here's a pill. Can't sleep? Here's a pill. You have a runny nose and maybe a little cough? Here's an antibiotic. So, and we forgot about all these other things that help and don't have bad side effects. So that's
so true. Well, we're going to take another break right here. That was beautifully presented. Dr. Andrew Campbell, thank you so much. And we will be continuing our discussion just a few minutes, and you get to hear about some other shows that they have right here on Progressive Radio Network. You can always reach us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse, and we will be right back with more.
Progressive Radio Network is now on iTunes. Search for us to listen and download past shows or get them updated automatically. Just type Progressive Radio Network in the search bar and download any show free of charge. Progressive Radio Network, information for the independent mind.
Does the current dire state of the economy have you totally upset and confused? There are solutions to our financial ills, but first we have to get a handle on what's really going on. I'm Ellen Brown, author of Web of Debt and a new radio show host here on PRN-FM, inviting you to join me and my co-host, Walt McCree, as we look behind the curtain at the shadowy world of global monetary control and what we can do to break ourselves free. The show is called It's Our Money, and it airs on Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern. We'll be talking with experts in the world of monetary policy, as well as with people who are actively working to reclaim control of public money to benefit the public interest. So please join us for It's Our Money, Wednesdays on PRN, FM, or by podcast.
The Dr. Peter Breggin Hour interviews the most exciting innovators in the field of mental health, from therapists and researchers to advocates of patient rights. Join me and other pioneers in psychology, psychiatry, and empathic living with the aim of improving your life and the lives of everyone you touch. Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Listen live or on the archives 24/7 at PRN.FM. Don't forget to rate the show on iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
And welcome back right now for more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We are having an absolutely groundbreaking discussion. This is why I love to do radio. As most of my listeners know, we've been doing actually radio since 1980, but I've been doing holistic medicine since 1964, and yet I am learning a lot of new things today from our guest, Dr. Andrew Campbell, MD, and he is the editor-in-chief of several excellent medical journals, Alternative Therapies in Health and Medicine and Advances in Mind-Body Medicine. And you can find out where he's presenting along with other wonderful lecturers for InnoVision, which is InnoVisionHM.com, and they are putting conferences on for integrative medical professionals and other interested parties all around the country. So thank you again for being our guest today, Dr. Campbell. Really fascinating information about the microbiome.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. It's always an honor and a pleasure. One of the things I think it's, as we're talking about the microbiome, is what can we do to help it? A lot of people think that, okay, I eat yogurt, and they're, you know, or what some people call kefir or others call kefir. Well, don't forget, in the United States, all dairy products have to be pasteurized, all commercial yogurts. And the National Yogurt Association established a live and active culture seal for all yogurt manufacturers and their products. They have to contain a minimum of 100 million cultures per gram, but here's the key, at the time of manufacture. But it is done before post-fermentation heating. The problem is that even if some make it through all that, there's still a problem when you eat commercial yogurt, and hopefully you don't eat the kind with quote-unquote fruit-flavored or sweetened or et cetera, because those can contain things like high fructose corn syrup and artificial sweeteners and coloring. So don't if you're going to eat yogurt, have plain yogurt. The same with kefir. However, when these reach the stomach, the stomach acids kill bacteria. It's meant to do that. And so they don't survive the stomach. If a few do, then when they reach the small intestine, they hit the bile acids. Bile is very acidic. And here we go again. So those are killed. They never reach the gut or the microbiome. These are mainly lactobacilli and bifidobacterium. They can't. They're destroyed before. Maybe a few make it, but they're not able to make a difference. The other thing is that people will go to the store and they'll purchase bottled probiotics, either on the shelf or in the refrigerated section. Well, the University of California, Davis, did a study. They took off the shelf and from the refrigerated part of grocery stores 16 different probiotic products, and they purchased them, and they took them to the lab, and the findings were very surprising. Of the 16, only one matched what was on the label. The others were found to have capsule-to-capsule variation. Others had incorrectly identified the species on the label and all kinds of mismatches. So you really don't know what you're getting in these bottles. There is one group of probiotics that do make it, and these are bacilli. Bacilli are spores. And these spores make it through heating, make it through anything. They're very hardy. They grow in the earth. So they arrive in the gut, and there they start to germinate. So those are the kind of probiotics you want, probiotics that contain bacillus spores. For instance, Bacillus subtilis, Bacillus indicus, et cetera. For example, Bacillus indicus produce a number of carotenoids. These are lycopene, which you get like from tomatoes, lutein, beta-carotene, astaxanthin. These are have all important beneficial health effects, which these other from yogurt don't have. Lactobacilli don't do that, and bifidobacterium don't do that. So it's very helpful for people to take bacillus spores. Also, there's a recent study from England that gave these bacillus spore probiotics to patients with rheumatoid arthritis. And they went from essentially being non-mobile. They could get up and they could go to the mailbox and they could go to the kitchen and the bathroom and the bedroom, et cetera. After 2 months, they were able to run. So that is how effective you can make your microbiome by using the right kind of probiotic. And I think that's very important.
Very important. So people actually have their own control. It's not like you're just walking around and, you know, maybe you'll be lucky and you'll get some of these positive bacteria or not. That you do have a choice to re-inoculate. And one of my favorite ways to suggest that people do that clinically, and I'd like to know what you think, is actually using natural fermented products such as kimchi or sauerkraut.
Yes, sauerkraut, pickles, but done the old way. Don't get the crunchy, famous kind that you get in the store, because that's not how grandma prepared them. Those have artificial coloring and flavorings in them. But if you get the natural one, that's a probiotic in itself, as is sauerkraut, as is kimchi. Those are all good probiotics. And I always eat those foods, but not every day. But I do take my probiotic with bacilli every day, because that is something I don't want to go without.
So much on the market, as you said, and they vary greatly in if they actually will live or not. And, you know, we don't like to give exact brands right here because this is a non-commercial show, but is there a way for people to know a good, viable kind of probiotic to get?
Well, as you say, it wouldn't be proper for me to tell you such and such brand or anything, but you can certainly Google it and just use Bacillus probiotic.
Okay.
If you use that, you eventually come up with some that are available. There's not that many. So, you know, it's not like you're going to get a big list.
Okay, well, that's a good way to make
sure
that one you're saying lives after you do use an oral intervention.
Yeah. Actually, if you Google Bacillus probiotics, you're going to get several studies that are in PubMed that have been published about these, how good these are.
Yeah, and that is excellent, because also I have to say, in terms of hospitals that I work with, some of the hospital pharmacists are actually beginning, amazingly enough, and let's proceed with more of this, to concomitantly offer the doctor to just check off a probiotic at the same time. They're actually joined together with antibiotics, so that there's some consciousness about to replenish this after the use of an antibiotic, even within mainstream pharmacies.
Yes, I agree. That's very, very important. I think that the more people start using probiotics and the right kind, they will feel the difference. And, for example, if they would Google Bacillus indicus, I-N-D-I-C-U-S, with the letters H-U-36, that's a particular bacteria that was studied in England, and it shows how good this particular bacillus spore is. Again, it's Bacillus indicus, HU36, spores. And it is in, it's the one I use for myself and my family, because it's, I think it's, and it's make, it does make a difference. Cause I see sick people, et cetera, who cough and sneeze all over me and I don't get sick.
Yeah, it's very helpful, because you did talk about, of course, we didn't get to go deeply into our whole topic, but we certainly covered lots of information about why the microbiome is not to be considered like something that we have to go after and kill. It's actually part of our body, and you listed so many things that it just naturally does to support our health and well-being. You know, that's probably helpful for us, but it may be doing it for its own reasons also, because we are the walking facility within it, which it lives. So it's very much to its benefit to maintain our health and wellness too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so I think that
they're beautifully. So thank you so much for all the work that you do, Dr. Andrew Campbell, medical doctor, immunology and toxicology expert, as well as delivering all these wonderful webinars and seminars to people all over the country, and for publishing Alternative Therapies in Health and Medicine and Advances in Mind-Body Medicine, which anybody can look up. Is there any other parting words that you would like to share with our listening audience?
Yes, there is. I think you're doing a wonderful job in interviewing important people on your show, because this is what the public needs. This is what healthcare professionals need. They need people like you to help spread the word.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for listening. You can always find us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, and I'm wishing you best.